Comic.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Rashad
Evans. This is David Salvin.
Hey everybody, this is Joe L.T.J. Dirksen.
Hey guys, this is Jason Anthony McDonald.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Moller.
Yes, yes, from the Northwest, it is yet another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio. And I am Kelsey Mullen coming at you from Vancouver, British Columbia. Joining us now on the phone once again is Brendan Lear. Brendan, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, Kelsey. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Did you enjoy your fireworks last night?
I did, yeah. For people who don't know, in Vancouver every summer they have a big fireworks display in late July. It's Symphony of Light, I believe, is what it is called. And it was pretty loud, man, but it was good. It was good times.
It sounded like there was, another heat robbery going on in your neighborhood when I was talking to you last night.
Yeah, you know, it's actually my neighborhood's pretty good. I gotta say, I live in a very nice neighborhood. I've can't complain too much. But anyways,
I would expect nothing less of you living like a high roller in B-town. You know.
Oh yeah, totally.
That's such a connected guy. How can you know? You're not like you're gonna live in the slums.
Yeah, I know. I'm living fat. Just living fat.
And you too, listeners, could be live large if you become a full contact fighter
journalist. That's right. Yeah. But man, all kidding aside, we've got a huge show coming up again today, yet again. Carol the Heat Parisian will be joining us, Joe Dirksen, so it's going to be a stacked show. One thing I did want to mention too is we've been getting feedback, and again I appreciate that from everybody, and I've seen some of the feedback on the threads. And Brendan, did you see that one thread? They're talking about our show, and the one guy mentioned that he thought the show was okay. You know, he's like, the only thing he mentioned that he found our accents extremely annoying.
I don't get the interweb where I live in Canada, so I only hear word of mouth. You know.
Yeah, up on the ice fields that you live on, it's probably tough to get the internet.
It is.
So yeah, I don't know what that's about. I've always heard that Western Canadians supposedly don't have too distinguishable of an accent, but apparently we do, Brendan.
I don't know, eh?
Yeah, I don't know what they're talking about. One thing I wanted to mention too, before we get into the show with Carol Parisian, is the Ryan Bennett charity card that's going on this weekend in Lemoore, California. The WEC is putting on an event where all the proceeds will go to the Ryan Bennett Foundation, and I just wanted to mention that's a very, very notable and worthy cause.
It certainly is, you know, and it's been a while now since Ryan tragically died, and you know, you and I were in contact with him from time to time, and he was one of a kind and did probably more than anyone else that we can think about, really, for MMA and MMA journalism and the coverage of the sport. So it was an unbelievably tragic death. And hopefully everyone is out there bidding on the eBay stuff and doing what they can on the MMA Weekly site to support Ryan's family. I believe I read somewhere, and this is something that was absolutely tragic, that he was actually, when he died, between jobs, he'd just been hired by the Canadian cable channel, the Fight Network, and actually didn't have any insurance when he died. He was hadn't filled out his forms or something yet. So, very, very important event, and support it however you can. It's going to be on HD Net, and I'm not sure what we can do up here in Canuckville apart from making some contributions here and there on the sites, and a lot of sites actually have links to that. So
yeah, I believe even if you just go to MMA Weekly, there's a PayPal donation for the Ryan Bennett Foundation. So you're absolutely right. And props to guys like Wes Sims, who are going to be fighting for free on that card this Friday. So all those guys definitely doing a huge service to the cause. So
a lot of people give lip service to Bennett, you know, but Sims was called up. They offered him the Bazrutin fight. He figured out that if he fought Bas, then he couldn't have fought in the Ryan Bennett show, and he turned down not only a big show that could have certainly made him a lot of money and made him a lot of fame, but now he fights for free, basically. I think none of the fighters are getting a salary, so that's a really demonstration of Wes's character, and who'd have thunk it, eh?
Yeah. There's no doubt about that.
No doubt.
All right, man. Yeah, definitely. I wanted to get to mention that, and we'll get into it here in just a moment. We'll have Carol Parisian on as he's taking on fighting Diego Sanchez August 17th on the next Ultimate Fight Night on Spike Television. So stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pit Bulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Milicic as he squares off in a fight to the finish against Jiu-Jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the Columbus Razor Club, led by Mark Coleman, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton. Plus, the historic supermatch of Milicic versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League. Pure sport. For more information, go to IFL.TV.
By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing full contact fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fight wear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic full contact fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a Full Contact Fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at FCFighter.com, or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. All right, welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now is the Heat, Carol Parisian. Carol, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you guys doing?
We're well, thanks. Carol, I guess my first question right off the bat, so how's the training coming along? You've got the big fight coming up against Diego Sanchez. How is the training coming along for your August 17th fight against Diego?
It's pretty good. It's coming along. I'm training all my cardio, you know, weightlifting and grappling. I'm just really intense on my training right now. I'm just trying to get my cardio up there and be ready for the nightmare. Carl, what do you think facing off against Diego Sanchez? Everyone sees him as a very young up-and-comer, and I guess it's a lot of our impressions. People who've followed MMA for a long time, obviously you're a very experienced fighter, but people don't recognize how young you are. Can you tell us about when you started fighting professionally and actually how long you've been fighting?
My first MMA fight, I was 14 years old. I fought in Mexico, and I fought a fighter named Daniel Lopez. He was 22 years old, and he was like 10-0 or something. I don't know what his record was, and he was the best fighter in Mexico. And I whooped him for 5 rounds, and I was 14 at the time, so I was like, man, if I'm 14 and I'm doing this, you know, what if I'm like 22 myself, like he is right now? So basically,
what did you say when you crossed the border? You're going to fight a professional MMA fight?
Yeah, it was an MMA fight. There were like probably 4,000 people in Mexico, and there is no age. It's funny, when I actually weighed in for the fight, they found out that I was fighting Daniel Lopez, the guy that tried to weigh me in. And they were like, you know, you got to sign some paperwork. Your dad's got to sign some paperwork because if something happens, you're not responsible. And everyone was like, dude, you should. And I said, who is this Daniel Lopez guy? Can you point him out? They said, well, if you get in the locker room, you can't miss him. When I got in the locker room, I saw a bunch of guys around this one guy, and this one guy is just throwing leg kicks like an axe going up and down, like cutting a tree. So I was like, right, so this is the guy I'm fighting. And that was about it, man.
And you were 14 years old. Were you training with Gokor and Gene LaBelle at that time?
Yeah, I was training with them at the time, yeah.
And how long have you been training?
I've been training for 16 years. I've been at Gokor's place for the last almost a year because he's just had his head up his ass for a long time. And too much drama between me and him, and I just don't like the guy.
Oh, really? So it's not an M. It wasn't, one of my questions was going to be, what was the split like from Hayastan? And it doesn't sound like it was very amicable.
No. It wasn't like, oh, I have to leave, guys. You know, I was just, you know, the longer I stayed there, they just kept me down. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't want to go out and get into it with you about the Coker stuff, but I've always had problems with him, always had drama. His mission in life was money, nothing else. He doesn't know anything about anything. He hasn't done anything in his life. He thinks he knows everything, and he hasn't done anything in his life. He doesn't do shit. He's a guy. He's a con man, and he's one of those guys that just all he thinks about is money and making money off people. And I was like, dude, you gotta better your damn mind. You know, no one's gonna make any money off me unless I'm making a lot of money off myself.
Yeah, wow, that's
you got a little worked up there for a second, but I'm not gonna continue on the Goku issue because I gotta talk about that guy.
Yeah, it's unclear because nothing has really been reported about your split, and but we were talking to Boz last week, and Boz mentioned that you were training with him and Randy Couture and Mayhem Miller new outfit in Los Angeles.
No, I haven't trained with Boz. I'm very good buddies with Boz. I haven't trained with him, actually. I worked training with him a long time ago, but the gym has opened up Legends, which would be in L.A., Howard and Labreda, me, Randy Couture, Boss Wooten, Jason Mayhem Miller. We'll be teaching over there.
Now, going back to the Diego fight, did you watch his last fight with Johnny Alessio, a tough Canadian fighter? What were your impressions of that fight, Carol?
Well, I trained with John Alessio before, and I even said to everybody, I said, there's no way Diego Sanchez can take John Alessio down double leg or single leg, because John is very good in sprawls. He's very incredibly good in sprawling and stuff. So my impression was I knew he was going to be able to take him down. I actually knew that he would probably win the fight off how aggressive he was. He was trying to push the fight. He was trying to take John down. He was trying to fight, and all John did was he sprawled and just brawled just a little bit, not much.
Now, did you have, you had Johnny winning that fight? I mean, some people had John win that fight. Did you see Diego winning it, or what?
No.
What would you have scored?
No, I'm buddies with John. He's a great guy, but I never lie about stuff like this, especially like my business here. No, I didn't see John win the fight. I saw John doing very well in the fight. He had a lot of potential to win the fight if he pressed the action just a little bit more, but he didn't do that, and Diego was trying to fight. Diego was punching. John was also punching, and John actually gave him a pretty big cut in his right eyebrow, but he wasn't, like, unleashing the strikes. He was just pecking him with jabs and hooks, and Diego was the one pressing the action, shooting for big downs, trying to grapple him and hop on his back for, like, 3.5 minutes, which was bizarre, but I think Diego won the fight.
Yeah.
So, Carl, how has your training changed in the last year? I know we've seen video of you training with guys like Mayhem Miller and actual competitive MMA fighters. Do you see that as the step up that you needed to go up to that next extra level, and take a shot at the championship, the welterweight championship?
Sure. You know, it's very, that question has, people have always told me that question, and I have answers that people a lot of times don't believe. The truth is, for a lot of my fights, I've never really trained that hard. I really haven't. And I've ate whatever I want. I drank whenever I want. A week before the Nick Diaz fight, I was drunk. I had like 15 apple martinis. Sorry to say, but I mean, yeah, it's stupid of me, and you know, it's my professional career, and I'm not supposed to do stuff like that. But
did you say green apple martinis?
Apple martinis, 15 of them, and I got plastered. But the thing is that what I'm trying to say is that a lot of my fights I haven't really trained for. Like, I've trained, you know, but like for the George St. Pierre fight, great fighter, unbelievable guy, nothing taking anything away from him. He deserves everything he gets today. Before that fight, I trained for like a couple of weeks, 2.5 weeks, and nothing consistent. Wednesday night, 2 days before the weigh-ins, I was having a apple pie with an ice cream on top. And I cut 16 pounds in the last 2 days. Just nothing, again, St. Pierre beat me today very clearly. He was better conditioned. He got the best of me. I had a bad day. He had a great day. But what I'm trying to say again is a lot of times I don't really train for a fight like I'm supposed to. When you saw me footage of me training with Jason Miller, I actually fought Jason Miller a couple of years ago. Training with Jason Miller and Tito and Randy and Quentin I was getting ready for the Matt Hughes fight before I had that little mishap and I told my hamstring couldn't fight. But right now I'm stepping up. I'm cleaning my diet out as much as I can, let's just say. At the same time, I'm getting better partners to train with, and I'm just trying to push the fight and become the welterweight champion of the world.
Now, what sort of made you change your mind as far as you're talking about you haven't trained too much for some of your more notable fights, and this time you are? Is that because you've had a different mindset on your career in MMA, or is it because you just respect Sanchez that much?
No, I respect every fighter. I never underestimate anybody. People saying, who was this Diego Sanchez guy, came off the show and this, and I tell people, it doesn't matter where the guy came off. He's a good fighter. He's undefeated. He's beating a lot of tough guys. He believes in himself. He's one of those character type of guys, and he's a tough kid, you know. And I don't underestimate anybody. The whole thing is that, you know, when I started training, my, after the St. Pierre fight, it changed my whole outlook on the fight game. You know, I hadn't lost in a long time. When I lost to St. Pierre, I knew my performance wasn't the best because I messed up on my diet and my training. So what I had to do was I went back to the drawing board and basically started trying to eat a little better, trying to concentrate more on training, better partners, and put my mind and my focus more on training and MMA than anything else. At the same time, trying to change my game a little bit. You know, I put St. Pierre in my guard and I tried to submit him for the whole 15 minutes. I was like, I can submit him, I'm coming close. But what happened was, after the second round, I started wearing down because I started too much submissions on him, and he started out-muscling and exposing himself out of that submissions, and that's what drained me. But basically, you know, as the time goes by and the sport gets bigger, the fighters get more experience, everybody's got the whole well-rounded game going on, you have to keep up. It's an update, you know. It's like, you know, you just got to keep updating your game and basically, you know, just train all the time. People go out all the time and party. You can't do it all the time. You just got to be consistent at what you do. And because this is my job, and this is what I do for a living, and I just have to be professional at it.
Mm-hmm. Carl, I have a question about your judo background. And if you read the forums, a lot of the forums sort of hold you up as the standard of success of transitioning judo skills into MMA. What do you think of I was wondering, do you feel pressure from the judo community? Do you feel any allegiance to them, number one? And number two, what do you think of the really high-caliber judo fighters in Pride? Are they missing something in their transition game? So why aren't any of the Japanese or European judokas who are world-caliber really coming to the fore in MMA?
Well, going back, there was a couple of questions in one, but... In the beginning, I was kind of pressured from the judo world, like, hey, you know, you're representing judo, because when I fought Dave Strass in the first UFC 44, Undisputed, that was my first, that was my debut, I went in there not as just a judo guy. I mean, I know how to strike, and my grappling was pretty big. I'm a pretty decent grappler. At the same time, my roots come from judo. You know, my strength, everything I do in the fight game, everything still belongs to my judo. But... I mean, watching the judo guys in Pride, see, I don't want to be cocky or anything. I mean, like, Yoshida. Yoshida is an Olympic champion judo guy. I wish I had his results. He's unbelievable in judo. He was. What I tell this to everybody, Yoshida is fighting people. He's on vacation right now. He's not really in shape. When Yoshida was in shape, he was fighting 90 kilos at the Olympics in the world, and he was annihilating people. Right now, he's just fighting because he's getting a lot of money. I don't think he's that serious about the fight game. He just does it because there's a lot of money involved, and it's an exciting sport. As far as me, people ask me all the time, how do you throw people? You don't have nothing to hold on. They're slippery. It's hard to launch a fighter off his feet and throw him. The truth is, I don't know. It comes to the point where it's just a feel. You know, it's like I feel my opponent, and every time I feel him, you know, kind of like he's going off balance or he's weak, I feel the weakness of it, like where his body is. And that's why I try to go for the throws. But it doesn't work all the time. I get lucky a lot, thank God, and at the same time, I try to stay consistent at my throws.
How do you find that you've been received by the judo community? It seems you came from a very untraditional judo background, but do the more judo purists, are they coming around to accepting MMA and your success in MMA more, or do you still find that some judoka are very standoffish about about the participation in MMA?
Oh, no. I don't know. First of all, that's nobody's business. And but the truth is, no. I mean, look how many judo guys are fighting Pride. Paul Mastula, world and Olympic champion. Great judo guy. I've watched the guys for years. Takimoto, he won the Olympics at my weight category in 2000. You got Yoshida, you got Nakamura, you got a lot of guys that they're getting to MMA because judo guys are like biased about that stuff. I've had people say, Carl, leave this fighting thing, man. You can win the Olympics, you can do this, you can go to the Worlds, you're that type of an athlete and blah, 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 and you gotta leave this stuff and get more consistent on judo, you can be a great, great judo guy. But a lot of times, you know, I'm sorry to say judo doesn't really pay the bills that much, but I'll never leave judo. I'm always going to do judo because judo is my background. It's my main base. But at the same time, you know, not too many people are biased towards the MMA. I'm talking about judo guys. You know, they go what's along. When I fought the first UFC and I went to the U.S. Open afterwards just to hang out in judo tournaments and stuff, man, I had people just going crazy. Like, yeah, representing judo and all this. And, you know, everyone was happy about it. A little bit older guys, like the older coaches are like, you know, just be careful, you know. Don't do this stuff too much, you know. You're a judo guy, you know. But I respect everybody, what they say, you know. I try to listen as much as I can, but I still got to follow what I want to do, not what anybody else wants to do.
Now, Carl, doing some research for this segment on the show, I read an interview where you were talking about attending the Matt Hughes, Joe Riggs fight, the title fight that you were supposed to have, but you couldn't take it because of the injury. And you were very disappointed that an injury occurred. How disappointed were you, however, that the UFC didn't give you another title shot? I mean, I read that you wanted to fight in between that. Were you somewhat disappointed when the Matt Hughes Hoyce Gracie fight was signed that you realized, and then George St. Pierre Matt Hughes, that you might have to wait a little bit longer for that title shot finally?
Yeah, the truth is that for a second I got promised. They said you'll get the title fight again, but you have to wait for a long time because there's so many guys winning the fight. They're looking at the rankings to fight for the title, like George St. Pierre, and I think he deserves a title shot. Like I said, when Joe Rogan interviewed me from the last fight, you know, I just have to work my way up again. Basically, I haven't been fighting for almost 10 months. After the Matt Serra fight, I was off for such a long time. Almost 10 months I hadn't fought. So I didn't want to go back right off the bat and get a title fight because it would have been the smartest thing for me to do. Mm-hmm. So Joe Silva gave me a fight named Nick Thompson, which I fought UFC 59, and then they offered me BJ Penn again, and for some reason the second time, BJ didn't want to fight again. I don't want to say he's scared or anything, but it was actually weird that he refused to fight again. He's got his own reasons for that. But and then they said, you'll fight Diego Sanchez. You'll find the winner of Diego Sanchez and John Alessio. And if you win that fight, we'll give you a title shot again. So I'm on the border here. If I, God willing, beat Diego Sanchez, then I'll get my title shot again.
Right.
Wow, that's great. That's great news. You say BJ Penn again. Have you not fought BJ Penn before, have you?
I never fought him. I've talked to him. I'm decent buddies with him. And they offered me once, and he said no. He wanted to fight either the winner of Sean Sherk St. Pierre, which St. Pierre won, or Matt Hughes. And St. Pierre has won, beat Sean Sherk, and they said, okay, fine, you know, we promise you that fight, so we'll give you St. Pierre. So it's the first time he said no, which was understandable. Second time, it was weird. I mean, the source was, you know, Joe Silva, the UFC matchmaker. He said, I called him again, and after they put your name down on a paper saying, we will fight Carl Parise, and there was a list of the guys who will fight. And then they said no again, for some reason. I don't know. So I have no idea. We didn't get to fight. That would have been also a very good fight. And then Diego Sanchez challenged me twice, once on TV, and I just told Diego Sanchez, you know, be careful what you wish for, because it just might come true.
Is this going to be another classic Carl Parisian match where it's a ground war, but an exciting ground war like George St. Pierre, like Nick Diaz, or are you going to play it a little bit more conservatively?
Well, I really want to win this fight, one way or the other. The truth is, I can never call fights, especially on mine. You know, I can never say, I'm going to be doing this, you'll see me. I've always said, you'll see me being aggressive, you'll see me pushing the fight, hopefully, you'll never see me stop fighting, that's for sure. But at the same time, I don't know, either it'll be a ground game, because Diego's going to be shooting all day on me. It'll be a stand-up war, it'll be a clinch war, I don't know where the fight will go. It should be a very exciting fight, because Diego's also a very exciting fighter, and he likes to push the fight. You know, at the same time, you know, he's going to meet the heat, and let me see if he's going to be able to handle it.
Now, my final question for you, Caro, is looking ahead to the George St. Pierre Matt Hughes fight. I mean, obviously, you fought George St. Pierre, and you've done a great amount of preparation for Matt Hughes. If you were to pick a winner in that welterweight fight, and you're obviously hoping to get by Diego Sanchez, who do you think you might be fighting for the welterweight championship in the future?
Oh, I don't know, man. I really don't know. George St. Pierre is not the same fighter when he fought Matt Hughes the first time, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. George is very confident that he's going to beat Matt, and because he beat two very tough guys, Sean Shook and Frank Trigg, and he stopped him in the both first round. I don't know. I think it's a 50-50. People saying, you know, no, Matt Hughes will lose, and a lot of people saying Matt Hughes will win. I really don't know. I heard people saying in the beginning that some George St. Pierre will beat Matt Hughes because he's unstoppable now, but you know, you're forgetting Matt Hughes, you know, he's done everything, but he's the best welterweight of all around the world.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I honestly can't call that fight. I think it's a 50-50. I think if Matt gets the fight to the ground and keeps him there, which is kind of hard to keep George St. Pierre on his back, I think Matt can oppose his will and actually submit him in a certain way. But if the fight's standing, I think George St. Pierre is going to get the best of Matt Hughes. And seeing George St. Pierre in the last two fights, no one's been able to take him down. A guy like Sean Shook has great wrestling, couldn't take him down at all. He stuffed him and actually took him down. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a very interesting fight. I'm probably leaning a tiny bit more on George St. Pierre's side because he's younger. He's a great athlete. Same with Matt, but Matt can win the fight anytime and anywhere.
Yeah, it's
Carl, my last question for you is if Sean Shook doesn't like fighting at 155, I can't envision him getting down there. I don't know if he'll have to chop off an arm or a leg to get down there. But if he comes back up to 170, would you be interested in fighting him again in the UFC?
Sure, actually, no problem. Yeah, in a second. I talked to Shasha before his last fight, the same day as I fought his teammate Nick Thompson. And actually, he doesn't really cut that much weight for 170. He's like he walks around 175, 174. So I think he could come down to 155, but yeah, I don't think he'll come up to 155. I don't know, say 170, because I kind of, in his voice, I can tell he doesn't, because there's so much competition. He wants a belt, and the only belt he can get at this point is the 155 pounder belt, which I'm pretty sure, you know, he's very confident. I think he's one of the favorite guys to get that, lightweight belt. But 170 is too much competition, man. I mean, competition is just stacked. Mm-hmm. They got so many good guys at 170, it's not even funny. I mean, guys are just getting born every day at 170. So, it's amazing. So, I don't know. If he ever comes up and wants to fight, hey, I'll give Sean Shook a fight, no problem. I respect him enough, and I like to avenge my loss. A little controversial loss, but no problem.
Well, Caro, we really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy training schedule to come on the show and talk with us, and we wish you all the best of luck on the Ultimate Fight Night card, which is coming up August 17th.
Thank you.
Good luck, Caro.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network. And now, from his upscale 300-square-foot igloo in the trendy Icefield district of Vancouver, British Columbia, he knows what he's talking about. Here's your host, Kelsey Mowat.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now is the infamous El Derte, Joe Dirksen. Joe, how are you doing today?
Good.
Whereabouts are you? In Winnipeg right now, or?
Yeah, I'm actually with my parents right now, helping them paint their house. I'm a couple of miles outside of Winnipeg, so pretty close to home.
Ah, nice. Always help. It's a good thing to help out the folks.
Joe, yeah, where is your primary residence now? Where are you training?
I'm living in Winnipeg now. Have an apartment there, a place to stay, and I've been training there most of the spring and summer. I still plan to travel quite a bit this year, but I'm going to wait until the harsh winter sets in here in Canada, and then I'll start running away and hiding, and most likely travel a little bit further south, do some training there for the winter, come home for Christmas, and then, head back down again for the rest of the winter.
What camps are you usually affiliated with down in the States?
I spent almost the entire winter last year with Jeremy Horn in Utah, and I'll probably end up back there again for a good portion of the season, and then I've talked to Duke Rufus a little bit about spending some time with him in the winter as well, so I'll probably travel around a little bit this year to a few different places. Those are the only two that I can almost guarantee, and there's one or two more I'd like to visit.
Now, of course, the big announcement as far as your career goes lately is the signing with the Toronto Dragons for the International Fight League. Joe, tell us a little bit about how that came about, who contacted you, and what are your thoughts on joining a team that's going to be coached by Carlos Newton?
It kind of just happened slowly at first. Terry Riggs called me, asked if I was interested, and I talked a little bit with my manager about it, and, we kind of went back and forth a few times before making a decision, and then things worked out, and so now we're going to go ahead and do it. And, Carlos Newton, obviously, is a big name in the sport. He's a fighter that I watched and looked up to long before I started fighting. So, it'll be really interesting hanging out with him and training with him for my next few fights.
And describe to Kelsey and I, and then our two other listeners, what is the format of the IFL? What does the team actually imply? So how much time are you dedicated to training with your team? Are you all together in the same place? And how much interaction is there really between you and your coaches? So how literally is it a sort of team endeavor?
Well, right now, all the details haven't really been worked out yet. I know several members of the team are living very close to Toronto, where Carlos is based, where the team is based. And for myself, the plan for me is just to basically fly out to Toronto a few weeks before every fight so I can spend some time with the team and so we can get to know each other and train together a little bit and, just work together for a week or two before I go down to fight with them.
Now, having talked to Maurice Smith and Pat Meletich, a couple of other IFL team coaches, they've told me in the past that one of the aspects of the IFL that they appreciate greatly is the fact that it seems like the organization is really looking out for the fighters. And, we're not talking big-time money, but were you signed to the typical, where many of the fighters, and I'm not sure exactly how it works, but that essentially five members of the team actually are given a yearly salary?
I don't know the exact details of my contract, to be honest with you. I know that right now we're committed to fighting, until December, and after that, we may extend our contract for another 6 months, or not, depending on how happy we are. And I don't know too much about the exact details. I know that a lot of guys are getting salaries for the full year, which I think is good. It takes away some of the uncertainty that sometimes comes along with being a fighter. And gives them some security and helps them to train and be ready to go.
Joe, I was wondering who else who are your teammates, or do you know yet exactly who the team is going to consist of?
I've heard some rumors and some names, but I'm not sure if they're confirmed, so I really couldn't say for certain.
Now, what do you think about the fact that, Toronto's been given a team, and of course it's Canada's largest market, and it's one of the largest cities in North America. Do you yourself kind of see the sense of irony in the fact that Ontario still is not legally sanctioned mixed martial arts?
Yeah, it's kind of funny that, Ontario being one of the only provinces that doesn't allow MMA, having, the highest number of fans in the country almost. But, obviously there won't be any fighting going on in Toronto, but, that doesn't mean that we can't get together and train there. There's plenty of fighters that come out of Ontario,
Joe, your fight, your fight career basically reads as a who's who at 185. You know, you fought. There are very few names in international or American that you haven't fought, but Carlos is actually one of them. How is it that you two had never squared off, and have you ever rolled with Carlos? Do you know him?
I've met Carlos three or four times. You know, we've always got along. He's a real nice guy. We've never trained together, and we've obviously never you know, been paired up in a fight either. I know he's done a lot of his career, spent a lot of his career overseas, and most of mine has been in North America, which is probably one of the biggest reasons why we've never ended up in the ring together. You know, who knows what's going to happen in the future, but for now, you know, it'll just be, should be fun just hanging out and training with him. I'm looking forward to that.
Now, just going over your recent career, you've won three fights in a row now, your latest at Extreme Challenge over Todd Carney. Joe, at this point in your career, do you kind of, and I know that, you know, you're a gracious guy, humble guy, so, I mean, this might be a tough question to answer, but at this point, do you find that it's tough that Monty sometimes has troubles finding you the world-class fighters that you were able to go up against in the UFC?
Well, I think that those fights are going to be, there's still more of those fights in my future. It's just a matter of waiting for the right opportunity. In the meantime, you know, it's nice to know that there's still people willing to jump in there with me, you know, and mix it up a little bit. Todd Carney was kind of a last-minute, you know, things, his opponent backed out or had an injury at the last minute, and, you know, I was kind of in the mood to fight, so I said, okay, let's do it, and, you know, Todd's not really one to shy away from anyone, so there's still, you know, plenty of fighters like him. As long as I get to compete, I mean, that's really the biggest thing is, you know, for me, I like this sport, I like competing, and it's still fun for me, so I'll take whichever fights I can get, and every now and then I get a really, you know, high-profile fight, and I'm just happy when they come. I'm not going to worry too much about, you know, how many of them I get. I'll just take whatever I can get and have fun along the way. And sooner or later, I'll get another big fight, and it'll be just as much fun as all the other ones, I hope.
Mm-hmm. Joe, how do you like to, I guess one of the recurring themes of Kelsey and I's chats with fighters has been, you know, what influences a fighter and a fighter's style, and is how do you balance the emphasis between winning and actually putting on a good show? And I ask you this question specifically because you've recently fought in the past year or so, fought Matt Lindland, who's always been accused of being a very boring fighter, and as a matter of fact takes this to heart, and so a lot of people conjecture that he was actually kicked out of the UFC for exactly that. You know, so how do you balance, or do you try and find a balance yourself? You're naturally very dynamic on the ground, so your fights look good naturally, but is that intentional?
You know, honestly, it's not. The only thought in my mind when I'm fighting is that I want to win. You know, I want to finish him and have the fight over with. I think, you know, if it's going to be exciting, it's probably because I'm constantly looking to finish the fight. I'm constantly trying to end it, you know, and I think that's what makes a fight exciting, is when a fighter goes after the fighter. You know, people like, you know, there's fighters, you know, like Matt Lindland who you know, have a different strategy for winning. You know, they know if they can win a fight if they just hang on and do exactly what they need to and no more, you know, don't take any chances. And, you know, and he wins. So, I mean, you can't really fault him. He's got a lot of wins on his record against good fighters, and you know, he's doing what he has to do, what's right for him, and I can't really fault him for that. That's not my style, I can't do that, you know, but that, I think that has to do with each individual fighter's personality and what goes on in their head when they're in a fight.
Is there any way, do you think, that rules could be changed to sort of emphasize that dynamic and sort of beautiful aspect of the ground game coming from jiu-jitsu and judo, the spectacular submissions and things like that? And I know a lot of fighters, especially in the last 3 years, the ground game has looked very conservative in that they don't want to go for submissions that will put them out of a dominant position, or
right.
They're very apprehensive to go for things like that. Do you think there could be changes in the rules that would emphasize more dynamic groundwork?
You know, as a fighter, I don't really tend to worry too much about things like that. Again, I'm just looking to win my fight any way I can. So, you know, rule changes, things like that, that's not really my area. You know, that's not something I plan to worry about in the near future. You know, I think it still comes down to each individual fighter, and promoters need to, you know, if they want to have exciting fights, they need to hire the fighters that they think are going to put on the best show. And, you know, I think that's about the only thing you can do, because every time you change the rules, fighters will just fight within the rules as best they can to try to win. And I think a boring fighter is going to be a boring fighter under any set of rules. I really don't see it changing all that much. So I think it still comes down to just matching up individual fighters and hope that their styles will create a good fight.
No, Joe, there was somewhat of a, I guess, outcrying, maybe an exaggeration to it, but there was definitely a lot of fans, both here in Canada, of course, and in the United States, that after your last couple fights in the UFC, where they were so incredibly close, and then essentially the decision was awarded for, you know, what Brendan was kind of talking about, referring to as this sort of stifling aspect of the opponents you faced. Did that do anything for you as a fighter? I mean, do you just look at it as like, you know what, I didn't win, so I got to move on, or the fact that there was, you know, American and Canadian fans, you know, calling out and saying, like, look, you know, Joe Dirksen is an entertaining fighter and we want to see him again in the UFC. Does that resonate with you at all?
Well, I'm certainly pleased that the fans are happy to see me fight. I mean, that's, at the end of the day, that's my goal, is to have people say, you know, Joe Dirksen's on the card, wow, that's going to be an exciting fight. You know, that's what I want my fans to think when they see my name. You know, obviously losing is a disappointing experience. I don't really enjoy that at all. But I think that my mistake in those fights was allowing them to go to decision. I mean, that's, as a fighter, that's, it has to be your mentality. You have to always look for a finish. And you know, it's my responsibility to make it exciting by trying to finish it. And I didn't. So, you know, I'm not going to really spend too much time worrying about the way the decision went. I can't change what happened. And so I just have to look forward and try to, you know, do what I can to avoid that in the future. You know, do I agree with every decision that's ever been made on my fights? No, but I'm not going to spend too much time complaining about it either. I can't do anything with the past. I'm going to just move on and try to make my future fights, you know, go differently.
Joe, I can't think of anyone who's more qualified to make assessments like this. So, if you don't mind, apart from yourself, who do you think are the top 185 fighters in the world? And you can include all the organizations you like.
You know, that's kind of a tough question because there's so many fighters out there, but just off the top of my head, obviously Rich Franklin is one of the best. Dan Henderson, obviously. Anderson Silva's really, really been doing well. And Jeremy Horn is also one of my favorites. You know, off the top of my head, those are the top middleweights. And I'd like to think that I'm somewhere up there. But I'm nowhere near the end of my career either. I got time to go out there and prove it.
What do you think of Dennis Kang's progression through in Pride? Because you have actually a win over Dennis Kang, if I recall.
Yeah, Dennis is honestly still in my own mind the most impressive win I've ever had. I think he's dangerous in every aspect. He's got great groundwork, and he's got great stand up, great conditioning, a lot of experience. He's got to be one of the best fighters I've ever beaten. So, you know, definitely you see him doing well on the world stage. It makes me feel good about having, you know, competed at his level. But at the same time, you know, I'm just happy for him. He's going out there and doing really well, so that's great for him. And, you know, he's always been a tough fighter. He just didn't get a lot of credit early on in his career because he was young and had some losses to tough competitors in the beginning. But, you know, I'm not that surprised at all to see him doing well.
Now, we had Jason McDonald on the show a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about the Canadian middleweights, and of course your name was in there, Patrick Cote, David Loiseau, and Jason put Patrick Cote, he excluded Dennis because Dennis competes in Pride and doesn't really fight here in North America, so excluding Dennis, Jason put Patrick Cote as the number one Canadian middleweight. For a fighter that has a win over Patrick, what are your thoughts on his progression? It seems like he's turned his career around in the last year.
Are we discussing Patrick Cote right now? Or?
Yeah, Patrick Cote.
You know, Patrick Cote is a really tough kid. I mean, he's got amazing talent, and he's young. You know, he's still developing his game. He's got a whole world ahead of him. I think he's definitely going to be one of the toughest fighters coming out of Canada in the next year or two. You know, he's already proved he's tough. He's got some good wins. He's done really well, and I still think he's going to get better for a long time. I think that's pretty accurate to say he's one of the top fighters in the country. To try to pinpoint one fighter to say he's the best in Canada usually doesn't really work that well, because people tend to lose every now and then, no matter how good they are. So no one ever stays on top forever, but he's definitely at the top of the game.
Brendan, you got anything else for Joe?
I have one more question for you, Joe. And obviously you trained a lot with Jeremy Horn, and Jeremy Horn for a long time before his return to the UFC was considered to be one of the best fighters in the world. What is it about Jeremy Horn? You know, from the guy, it doesn't look like he's got a fantastic physique. You know, he was purported to train, you know, consuming large amounts of Mountain Dew. What is it about Jeremy Horn that draws people to him, such great fighters, to train with him? Is it his skill as an instructor? Does he just have some instinctual skill on the ground or instinct on the ground?
Well, I think obviously, you know, he's got all the talent in the world. He's got all the instincts. I mean, not only is he a good ground fighter, but he's also good on his feet. I mean, he's very well-rounded, good wrestling, good stand-up. He's just basically a very knowledgeable fighter with a world of experience. I mean, he's probably had more fights than almost anyone else in the game. And he's just really easy to get along with. And when you train with him, he's just very easy to learn from and work with. And I think that's why a lot of people enjoy working with him. He's just an easy person to get along with. You know, obviously, he's got all the talent and experience that someone could wish for. So, I mean, it's pretty simple. I mean, he's a, you know, nice guy, easy guy to train with, and he's good. So, you know, that's pretty much everything right there. And it's, you know, fun to watch him drink that Mountain Dew too.
Joe, my last question for you, kind of a bit of a two-part. I know that you've got some seminars coming up, so why don't you tell our listeners about where you're going to be teaching and instructing? And then the second part of that question is, I know you've got Kevin Manderson's coming along and fighting quite often here, well, not just here in Canada, but in the United States. So tell us a little bit about some other guys that you're training, including Kevin, and who we can look out for that are learning from yourself.
Well, basically the seminar is, more... basically just a little road trip. Kevin Manderson, obviously, you know, a good friend of mine, so the two of us decided to go on a road trip and just basically stop in at a few places along the way and do a few seminars. So we're going to be spending some time in Western Canada and British Columbia, and we're stopping at about four or five places out there to do some seminars, and that's pretty much it. To answer the second part of your question, you know, Kevin Manderson obviously is been my training partner for a few years now. He's been around the game a while. I think he's one of the up-and-comers at 155. I think he's currently one of the top three fighters in Canada at that weight class, and you know, he's improving all the time. You know, I really think he's just a short time away from breaking out on the world stage. And, you know, the two of us have been working together for a few years now, and now we're both training with Giuseppe Di Natale, K-1 fighter out of Winnipeg. And so the three of us are trying to put together an MMA program, and you know, we'll see what happens with that. It's, you know, we've got a lot of young new fighters that we're working with, and we'll just see what happens in the next couple of years, see where they go.
All right, Joe. Well, we appreciate you taking some time out from helping the folks paint the house, and we wish you all the best in the next upcoming month as you get closer to the IFL.
Thank you very much.
Good luck, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pitbulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Miletich as he squares off in a fight to the finish against jiu-jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the Columbus Razor Club, led by Mark Coleman, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton. Plus, the historic supermatch of Miletich versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League. Pure sport. For more information, go to IFL.TV.
Hey, Hey guys, Kelsey Mowat here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Mowat must be presented in business letter format in an aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Mowat before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. Brendan, some interesting comments from both Caro Parisen and Joe Dirksen. And in particular, Caro, I mean, some pretty animated comments about his split from Highest Dan Academy.
I'd never heard even rumors of there being bad blood there before, but yeah, it was very interesting. And I noticed that Carl was very, I don't know if he was careful, but didn't mention Gene LaBelle, you know, one of the original, you know, MMA fighters. It would be interesting to see if to know if what their relationship's like as well.
Yeah, he seemed to wait away from talking about Gene, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's and some interesting comments, too, about his plan for Diego Sanchez. It seemed to me like I kind of expected him to come out and say, yeah, I'm going to try to keep the fight standing. I mean, that's what Sanchez does all the time, and he's expecting Diego to take him down. And any fighter would expect that, but he did not seem at all concerned about the prospect of being taken down, and I guess, you know, he shouldn't really be, in the sense that he's got a well accomplished ground game.
Well, I think if you think of some of my favorite fights over the past few years have actually been Carl fights, and he had this. Some people are critical of him that he's like got one move, and if he doesn't Kimura someone, he's not going to finish the fight. But you know, fights, you know, his fight against St. Pierre, his fight against Diaz, they were just constant sub attempts one after the other, and if you have any appreciation of the ground game whatsoever, you know, you can't help but just salivate thinking about another fight like that, because they're just incredibly entertaining fights to watch, and it's fights like that that make you understand what the phrase, you know, lay and pray really means, you know.
And if he's not exaggerating about the fact that he's hardly trained for a lot of his previous fights as well, that you know, that could be a little bit of a mind game. Who knows? You know, maybe he's trying to get in Diego's head. If Diego were to listen to the show, who knows? But if he's not exaggerating that fact, then that'll be interesting as well.
Well, I think having the advantage of now in the last year or so training against legitimate MMA fighters. Not to say that his training partners before weren't, but you know, I'm talking world caliber, legitimate MMA fighters. You know, can't help but improve your game, and you know, people talk about it all the time, and are go out of their way to recognize the people that help them prepare for fights. So I think what we're going to see is a different Carl. Even the last fight, he looked very different, but in he dominated so much in the last fight that it was difficult to say. You know, it was difficult to say because it wasn't much of a test.
And credit to the UFC for putting on another good. I mean, it's shaping up to be a great card on Spike. And I know you've made several jokes in the past, but why get a pay per view when you can watch a card like this? And in some sense, it's true. I mean, you've got Joe Riggs fighting on this card, Chris Lieben. There's some pretty good matchups: Josh Koscheck, Jonathan Goulet. So there's going to be some interesting fights on that card for sure.
And no heavyweights.
Is there no heavyweights? I thought there was one light. Is it a light heavyweight? The Christophe Madu? Is that a light heavyweight fighter? It is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I would be very happy just to if they had all heavyweight fighters in their pay per view and all the lightweight, middleweight, and welterweights on their free shows. It would save me a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, and now there's some talk, and it's not been confirmed yet, so I don't want to give anyone the wrong impression. But there's some talk that Mark Coleman's returning to the UFC.
I read something to that effect today. Is that a good thing or a bad thing in your opinion, Kelsey?
I have mixed feelings about it. I think, you know, in one sense, I would have liked to see Mark Coleman's, and this could still happen, but I would have liked to see a rematch with Shogun Rua when he was returned, because I know that would have been an interesting matchup again to see that. But so from that angle, I was kind of disappointed to hear that he might be coming to the UFC, which might end any prospect of that rematch against Shogun. But I have mixed feelings about it. You know, obviously, the heavyweight division in the UFC is fairly thin, and you know, Mark Holman has been a world-class fighter for several years, but, I mean, he's, I don't think it's any big secret that he's on the tail end of that, of his career. So, you know, he could still be a force in the heavyweight division in the UFC, largely due to the fact that it's not really stacked with too much talent right now.
I thought that would have been his last professional fight if it didn't turn out to be such a debacle. And even in interviews that I read and listened to surrounding that, you know, he was talking about, you know, having lack of motivation in the past to train and so on and so forth. So I think the unfortunate maiming of Shogun was has extended Coleman's career, but I don't think the UFC is really having to no offense to Coleman, but they're really scraping the bottom of the barrel. Not to say that he's the bottom of the barrel, but sort of making efforts. It's an effort to basically band-aid the situation, right? Like, Coleman's not going to be your reigning champion. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to probably win a championship. You know, he'll be there and have a couple fights, but again, it's like seeing Ken Shamrock fight. Like, get out of the way and let's see someone who's coming up and, you know, who's game, not someone who's looking for a couple more big paydays before they retire.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. And, you know, he does have a fairly well-known name in the States in particular, you know, storied wrestling career, etc. So I think that's part of the reason, too, is that they're hoping that they might jar the minds, the memories of some of the UFC fans from back in the day and have Mark Coleman return. But I agree with you. You know, it'd be nice to see some matchups and some development in the heavyweight division of some new and up-and-coming fighters. But we've been saying that for a couple of years now, and it just doesn't seem to materialize.
If Coleman has a big fight, it's going to take up a slot on another pay-per-view, a big slot, like half an hour of time that you'll just regret that you watched. And, you know, we could have had two small fights, you know, two small exciting fights, you know, in its place. And that's my prediction of what's going to happen. I'm pessimistic, and I don't want to sound too pessimistic, but, you know, who cares, right? Who cares?
Well, when you were talking about Lindland the other day, I thought that was a very interesting and a comment from him, and I never really thought about it this way, was when he said, you know, a lot of the bigger guys, one of the reasons the heavyweight division is so sparse across mixed martial arts, period, is that when you're a big dude and you've got athletic ability, you're throwing a football, you're playing basketball, you're playing baseball, hockey, and that's, you know, that's a good point, because there's so much money in those sports that I never thought about it that way, and it's kind of true. And if you're, you know, 170 pounds, 155 pound athlete, there's not as many options as far as professional sports go.
Well, and as well, it's you have to be a good athlete, because if you're a big guy like that and you haven't been training MMA and training all aspects of MMA, basically you're getting paid to go in there and get your frickin' lights punched out and take a lot of heavy, damaging shots, you know? So you're going to have a very short career, and if you make it through eight, you know, six, or what does it take to get into the UFC now as a heavyweight? You know, four
fights.
Six or eight wins?
Yeah.
You know, if you can make it to there, you know, you're in danger of fighting one of the sort of elite fighter like, you know, Arlovski or Sylvia, you know, and getting taken out. So it's just a different, completely different skill set than smaller fighters. The fights look less skillful. I think they're more dangerous. They're certainly to me more boring. But I don't know. I think a lot of a lot of guys, for the amount of money that they're making now, you're not getting $1 million to get your lights punched out. You're getting like $3,000 to get your lights punched out.
In saying that, the other night I watched the IFL, and it was Ben Rothwell versus Christoph Szczesinski. Christoph Szczesinski, one a Canadian Winnipeg fighter. He's been training at Team Tompkins and Boss Rudin a lot. And then Ben Rothwell is a great Miletic Systems heavyweight. And, you know, that was a great fight. I had it on at the pub I worked at. It was up on Sportsnet, and there was a few people watching. And they are excited, you know. And so every now and then you see that one fight of the heavyweights where you can see the raw appeal to fans. They like to see two big guys go at it. And it wasn't two horrible fighters, just big guys clocking each other. I mean, Ben Rothwell is a very skilled heavyweight, as is Christoph Szczesinski, who's just kind of started working on his striking game the last couple of years. And it was a good fight, you know. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is I agree with you. I always look for the lighter weight action, the welterweight, middleweight. It's always the more compelling division. But that said, it would be nice to see some development, especially for the UFC, of their heavyweight division, because every now and then you see those matchups that are very intriguing. And I mean, when you look at like a Fedor versus Krokop or Fedor versus Nogueira, I mean, those are classic heavyweight fights that are really one that go into the annals of MMA history.
Yeah, but I guess the question is, can Americans do that? Can American promoters do that? They're drawing exclusively from Americans, from an American talent base, which means these guys haven't been doing judo. They might have wrestled, you know, but again, the emphasis on wrestling, all the great wrestlers, all the great wrestlers, again, are the big guys are few and far between. And when you get really big, you know, look at the heavyweight and super heavyweight Greco matches. You know, that's like, oh, you levered the guy off his one foot, so there's a point, and you win 1 point to nothing. You know, it's just unbelievably boring to watch. So I think you have guys, internationally who have done judo or for their entire lives and are a little bit more dynamic and or kickboxing or are big guys. But again, the talent pool in the States, you know, martial arts in the States before MMA was waning. You know, it had its peak in the early 70s, and it was really waning except for organized sports. So you don't have that. You know, you don't have guys who've been kickboxing their entire lives, and if they are, you know, you saw some of the toughest fighters they could muster in the first few UFCs, and you know, they just didn't look that great. So I think unless the UFC is really willing to spend the money to get high caliber international competition, they will never have a dominant, you know, they'll never have a decent heavyweight division. And in order to have a decent heavyweight division, you have to build the fighters up, and that means you have to, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff, and unfortunately they seem to do that on pay-per-view, and it just angers me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, if mixed martial arts continues to develop, and if there actually ever is some substantial income for athletes, then perhaps you might see more guys get into, more of the bigger athletes getting into the heavyweight division, but, you know, that remains to be seen. A couple things I do want to mention before we get out of here. The Nick Diaz-Johnny Alessio fight is going to be August 12th in Stockton, California, the Warriors Cup. And that's an interesting welterweight fight that is kind of flying a little bit under the radar, I'd say, right now. I mean, there's a lot coming up, so perhaps that's why. But that's an interesting matchup between two guys who have had recent disappointments in the UFC. And it'll be interesting to see that fight. I don't think we'll be able to see it. It's not on pay-per-view or anything up here, but I'm interested. Hopefully we can see that fight at some point.
So both avenging losses against, or coming back from losses against Diego Sanchez, and Nick Diaz is another fighter that I just love to watch fight. You know, he's dynamic, he's got great stand-up, but he's not scared to take a chance on the ground. He's not, he's certainly the furthest thing from lay and pray, and he's really dynamic, and he's just a fantastic fighter to watch. And these are the kind of guys, I don't care if he's lost three fights in a row, that's meaningless to me, because I like what I see when I see him fight, and the fights are always exciting and always competitive. So, you know, I think the emphasis in MMA shouldn't be, you know, there's too much emphasis on records and perfect records, and, you know, he got a couple losses in a row. I don't care about that. You know, I like to see someone who's going to fight, who's going to demonstrate skill and be dynamic, you know, and not simply, you know, eke out a win or worry about a win.
Yeah, I agree. And with someone like Nick Diaz, he's certainly a fighter who's got some skills standing and on the ground that are most definitely exciting to watch. And Johnny Alessio, you know, whether or not he tries to keep the fight standing like he did against Diego, he might, it'll be interesting to see too if he learns some lessons from his fight with Diego and tries to stay more active and perhaps a little bit more aggressive in his upcoming fight with Diaz. But another thing I wanted to mention too was the ECC had a card in Nova Scotia last week, and Jason McDonald, who has been on our program, he won his third fight in a row, beating Fritz Paul by armbar. So I wanted to mention that as well for some of our Canadian listeners.
Congratulations, Jason McDonald, and hopefully we'll be seeing him in a big show very soon. Hopefully the American viewers will be able to take a look at him very soon.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Brennan, I'm going to let you get out of here, let you get back to your sordid life that it is.
And it is sorted, Kelsey. It is sorted. I have some very sorted business to attend to immediately. And I wish I had the likes of the leg kicking Ian Salivary and the smack talking Nick Diaz to go with me, but unfortunately I have my own sorry ass.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll talk to you again soon, man. Take care.